And then we're reading in the Epistle to the Hebrews, a letter to Hebrews, beginning in the 11th chapter, first verse. I'm going to add a little bit into this reading. We will, let me get there. We are also going to read a few verses from the beginning of chapter 12. I'll tell you when we're going to leap there. Well, let's start in chapter 11, verse 1. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Indeed, by faith our ancestors received approval. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was made from things that are not visible. And then we're going to skip forward to verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to be set out for a place that he was to receive as an inheritance, and he set out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he stayed for a time in the land he had been promised, as in a foreign land, living in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked forward to the city that has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, he received power of procreation, even though he was too old, and Sarah herself was barren, because he considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one person, this one as good as dead, descendants were born, as many as the stars of heaven, and as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. All these died in faith without having received the promises, but from a distance they saw and greeted them. They confessed that they were strangers and foreigners on the earth, for people who speak in this way make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of the land that they had left behind, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. Indeed, he has prepared a city for them. And then I'm going to jump forward to the beginning of chapter 12, first few verses. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin that clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the sake of the joy that was set before him endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Kids, as I said, the word heroes doesn't show up in the Bible that I'm aware of. But if we were to walk through all of chapter 11, we cut out some verses. But if we were to walk through all of it, what we would find is example after example. It's kind of a hall of fame for people of faith. There's just a litany of one person after another who by faith did this or by faith did that. And usually it meant walking into something that seemed impossible, something that seemed difficult. And as I was thinking about this passage, I wondered if there was a modern day equivalent. And to me, the modern day equivalent of this would be the pregame speech in the movie We Are Marshall. So, and if you didn't see that movie, that's okay. I will explain and I will share that for you in a little bit. Before I do, though, we need some context or you're not going to see the connection at all. But hopefully once I share that context, you'll go, oh, I totally see that. That makes sense. Before we do that, pause. I mentioned heroes. Heroes, to me, do at least three things in our lives. Heroes are people who instruct us because we look at their lives, we see what they do, and we feel challenged, and we want to do more because they're exemplary. They're good role models, and by their example, they instruct us on what is the right thing to do, that others around them are probably failing to step forward into, and they are uncommonly good, if you will, which kind of raises the bar for us. And in so doing, that means they also inspire us, right? When you see someone who does something exemplary, you kind of go, wow, I kind of need to up my game. I had an example, wasn't necessarily a hero in the sense of someone doing something courageous like we might normally think, but I bumped into someone who was, to me, pretty extraordinary and exemplary, and I told my son about it, and we're both kind of like, man, I need to get on it. I was telling him that yesterday I met with a young man who is going to take care of our lawn down in Texarkana, and he's a young guy. My wife met him, and she said, this is a kid, and I'm like, okay, you know, I thought, you know, anybody under 30, I think, to my wife is a kid, so I'm thinking, okay, he's 25 or, you know, something, and I talked to him on the phone, and I got to meet him last night. He stopped by, and he walked through the door, and I'm like, yeah, he is a kid. He's very baby-faced, you know, and I started talking to him, and this young man, he started mowing lawns. He literally just walked down the street with a gas can and a push mower and went to people's houses until he got some lawns. He started doing that when he was about 11 years old, 12 years old. And he continued to do that. And now he just recently bought a zero-turn mower, and he's got it about half paid off. He's got a half a dozen or so different like industrial-grade trimmers and blowers. He has his personal truck, he has a work truck, and I'm talking to him, and I said, and he's saying, yeah, I've got an account with Trinity, it's a church down tech, big church down, and he was talking about different people, and he said, I'm sorry, I had to do some apartments, that's why I'm behind, but I'm going to get to yours tomorrow. He said, and I said, you're going to have to start saying no to some things soon, probably. And he said, yeah, he said, school starts up Wednesday, and I'm worried how I'm going to get all this done before school starts. And I said, oh, where do you go to school? And I think he's going to tell me Texarkana College. And he says, I go to Arkansas High. And I'm like, really? I said, well, what grade are you? And of course, he's entering his junior year of high school. He's about 16, 17 years old. He owns two vehicles, a zero-turn mower, all this equipment. He's running around with these commercial accounts. I'm like, I'm just a loser. I'm like, this kid is 16 years old. He gets more done before noon, you know, than I'm probably getting done in a week. And he's just so humble and nonchalant about it. And I was like, oh my God. I told my son, and he did the same thing. I said, yeah, he's entering his junior year. He's like, what? You know? And I'm like, yeah. I said, guy, we got to get on it. But, you know, when somebody functions like that, and it, you know, it does, it challenges you, you know, you're kind of like, holy cow, you know, I'm whining about having to get the bulletin done, you know, and this poor guy's out there whacking lawns out in the heat. But so heroes, they instruct us, they inspire us, they challenge us, they also, I think, give us hope, because heroes, unlike superheroes in the movie, most heroes at the end of the day, they're folks just like us. They get up every morning and put their pants on one leg at a time just like we do. And so really, they give us hope because they paint for us a picture of something that could be. And we know it at some level. That really could be me if I made different choices. That really could be potentially me if I was willing to pay the price. And that's the tricky part, isn't it? It's being willing to pay the price. You know, this young man didn't get where he got by doing what was common. He showed up at my house at about 9 at night because I had texted him, and he said, hey, where do I need to send a check, da da da, whatever. So he knew I was kind of still at it. And so he drove by my house and saw the light on. He called me and said, so are you still here in Texas? I said, yeah. And he said, Well, I thought it'd be good to actually meet you face to face. Do you mind if I stop in? And he still hadn't gone. It's 9 at night. He still hadn't gone at home. He'd been mowing all day. That's why he's where he is, you know. Makes us really up our game. So heroes are important because they are people like us who live in exceptional ways. And I was wondering, I raised all that up because I was wondering, why in the world would the author of Hebrews take an entire chapter just to laundry list heroes, if you will? Well, because they're really important. We need heroes. We need those examples. We need to hear people who, like us, got faced with challenging things, and they stepped up to the plate, and they did something uncommon. Now, I haven't forgot about Marshall, but let's get into this context a little bit first of this passage. I was digging through the reading, and I was trying to understand why he would put this in here and what we were supposed to carry away from it. And there was a verse that kind of grabbed my eye, and it said, there was a verse in the middle of those readings that said that they had not received, though they had faith and they did these things, they hadn't received the promise. And I was like, well, what promise? What are they talking about? And as I looked at all the different people, there were different things promised. There, you know, Abraham was promised descendants in a nation. Moses, he was promised that God would be with him and that God was going to deliver his people. And then there was person after person and the promise. So I'm like, what is he talking about? So I dug into Hebrews. I went through and did a word study of promise in Hebrews. And here's the quick skinny. It really gets unpacked in 8, 9, and 10. Chapters 8, 9, and 10. I'm not going to walk you through every ounce of that. I'll give you the Cliff Notes summary at the end of that, which pops up in 9 and 10. 9, there's a really important verse. I just want to share two verses for you. 9, it says, "For this reason he is a mediator of a new covenant, so that those who are called may receive the promised eternal inheritance." So flag those words, eternal inheritance. "Because a death has occurred that redeems them from transgressions under the first covenant." And when I started to see that the promise, this an eternal inheritance, had some characteristics to it. So the promise that he's talking about, that's at the heart of this passage, is an eternal inheritance from God. It's something given to us from God that lasts forever and ever and ever. And then in 10, and I won't read the verse, but I'll give you the bullet points of it. In 10, he actually lays out what the eternal inheritance is. He says that we are sanctified, we are perfected, we are forgiven, and we're purified in conscience, and most importantly, we're given access to God. So that eternal inheritance, what makes up, we're sanctified, perfected, forgiven, purified, and we are given access to God. And it all has to do with remaking the old covenant. Because in the old covenant, basically what Hebrews says is, in the old covenant, if you had sin in your lives, what happened was, there was a high priest who had special access. He was the one guy who could go in the Holy of Holies in the tabernacle, this physical place, and he could make a sacrifice for you on behalf of folks. But that wouldn't last. And that was temporal, and that was an earthly tabernacle, and it was an earthly high priest. And what this author of Hebrews is saying is, but we now have a new covenant. We have a new mediator, Jesus Christ. And what he's done, it completely replaces and fulfills all of that old system. Because before, what you did, it was temporary. It was by a high priest who had to do sacrifice again and again. And you had limited to no access with God. Now, though, what Jesus has done is eternal, because he died and he rose and he intercedes nonstop for us. He's there forever and he's always before God. And if you all remember, when Jesus was crucified, one of the things that happened was the temple curtain was torn in two, the Holy of Holies was laid open, where no one but that high priest could go. And in my mind, symbolically, God was just laying it open and giving us access through Jesus Christ right to Him. We didn't have to have all these mediators anymore because we had one mediator and He's eternal. And that's what this author's trying to do. Now, he lays all this out. He gives them all this stuff. And at this point, I think he pivots. Like, he's laid out everything they believe and why they should believe it. And please, please, hang to this. And then in this chapter, right before, what he's doing is, he's now going, okay, they get it, they understand it. Now I need to really turn up the temperature on encouraging them to not give up. Because the people that this was sent to, the Hebrews, they were a persecuted people. And they were losing livelihood. They were being attacked for what they believed. And he knew, if I don't pump them up, if I don't give them some kind of pep talk here, if I don't show them that other people have done it, we're going to lose them. They're going to step away from the faith. And so he gives them this speech, which brings me to Marshall. That's right. Because I was thinking about that, and for those of you who did not see, how many of you saw the movie? Did any of you see it? It's really a great, just a couple of you. It's really a great film. It's done at least 10 years ago, I would say. And Matthew McConaughey's in it. He plays the lead coach. For those of you who don't, it's based on a true story. Those of you who don't know, there was a team for the University of Marshall, I think is out in Virginia, West Virginia, and there was a terrible plane crash, and they lost their entire football team and all of their coaches in a plane crash for this university. And they were determined to go ahead and move forward with a football program. So they recruited an entire new team, which you can imagine, they lost all the students that they had recruited, and now they were starting from scratch. Greener than green, these young men that were pulled, you know, this was the B, the C, the D team, probably, because they lost all the players and their coaches. And they hired in a young coach, because who in the world was going to want to take that on? You needed somebody young enough to not know better than to take it. And they got this guy named Jack. And he took it on, and he began to pour himself into these young men and challenge them to function and behave at a level that they had never functioned before. And before their first game, after hours of grueling practice, he brought them to a memorial site where six of the young men's bodies who had died in the crash were buried. And those six were buried there because they were so badly harmed beyond recognition that they couldn't identify these bodies, so they simply buried them together and created a memorial there to represent all those that they could identify. And he brings the team to the memorial site, and this is what he says to them. He says, "For those of you who may not know, this is the final resting place for six members of the 1970 Thundering Herd. The private plane crash that took their lives was so severe, so absolute, that their bodies were unable to be identified, so they were buried together. Six players, six teammates, six sons of Marshall. This is our past. Gentlemen, this is where we have been. This is how we got here. This is who we are. Today, I want to talk to you about our opponent. this afternoon, they are bigger, faster, stronger, more experienced, and on paper, well, they're just better. And they know it too. But I want to tell you something they don't know. They don't know your heart. I do. I've seen it. You've shown it to me. You've shown this coaching staff, your teammates, you've shown yourselves just exactly who you are in here. And when you take that field today, you've got to lay that heart on the line. Men, from the soles of your feet, with every ounce of blood you've got in your body, you have to lay it on the line until that final whistle blows. And if you do that, we cannot lose. Now, we may be behind on the scoreboard at the end of the game, but we will not be defeated. No, we came here today to remember six young men and 69 others who will not be on that field with you today, but they'll be watching. You can bet they will. They'll be gritting their teeth with every snap of that football. You understand me? How you play today from this moment on is how you will be remembered. This is your opportunity to arise from ashes and grab glory. We are, and the team yells out, Marshall. And he yells again, we are, and the team yells out, Marshall. And he ends and says, let the funerals end today. And I listen to that speech, and I kind of want to lay it alongside Hebrews. And if Jack, if we could put Jack side by side with the author of Hebrews, I think they would rewrite this a little bit, and it's marginal, and it would sound something more like this. Oops. Sorry, I looked down in the wrong spot. Here's what I think it would sound like. They would say, the author would say something like this. This is our past, gentlemen. This hall of faith, all these people I've been talking about. This is where we've been. This is how we got here. This is who we are. We are not among those who shrink back and so are lost. Those were the words he shared in Hebrews 10. But we are among those who have faith and so are saved. I want to talk about our opponent this afternoon. They are bigger, they're faster, they're stronger, they've beaten us, they have flogged us, they have stoned us, burned us, pierced us with the sword. They have left us completely desolate at times, and they know it. But I want to tell you something they don't know. They don't know your heart, and they don't know who's in your heart. I know who's in your heart. I do, and your heart is filled with Christ. You are His. He owns you. You are Christ's, and in His death you died, and in His resurrection you rose. Today, when you run that race, which is an image the author of Hebrews uses, when you run that race, you've got to lay it on the line. Men, from the soles of your feet, with every ounce of blood you've got in your body, run that race and endure it. Cast aside everything that would weigh you down. Every sin that would cling to you, cast it down and run with endurance and look to the one who is the author and the perfecter of our race. Now, we came here today to remember those figures of faith, those heroes of faith. They will not be on the field with you today. But that great cloud of witnesses, they will be watching. They are watching. And with every step you take, they grit their teeth in anticipation of you crossing the finish line. You can bet they will be watching. Do you understand me? How you run the race today from this moment on is how you will be remembered. In Christ, we are His, and nothing can separate us from Him. Not a sword, There is no opponent large enough. There's no threat big enough. There's no persecution strong enough. For you are Christ's own. Run the race and run it well. Most of those words are straight out of Hebrews. I just brought them together from different places. There is a great cloud of witnesses. We're all sitting here, I would venture guess, because somewhere along the line we had heroes of faith in our life. We had somebody who impressed upon us the need for Christ. And we had somebody who ran their race well. When I got ordained, my home pastor, Bob, that I mentioned in the children's sermon, and I'll wrap up with this, he preached for my ordination. I did something a little different. Shocking, I usually don't do things the way you're supposed to. But I wasn't ordained in the church I was going to because I was coming there as a stated supply and I wasn't going to be installed. And my church had walked along with me and carried me along so much that I was ordained in my home church. My home pastor preached. And he used imagery from one of the other epistles. And he talked about running the race. And he said, when I think about the race, I think about it as a relay race. And you know, in a relay, someone's running along with a baton. And there comes a point where you're running and you reach out and you're still running and the other person's kind of picking up speed. And for a moment, you hold the baton together and you're running together. But then at some point, that other person lets go. And you look up and you find you're carrying the baton now on your own. And that's so true. And the author of Hebrews this morning, I think speaking to those folks who are in that moment where they're just about to look up and see that the baton's in their hand and they have it alone. They're still kind of carrying it, but he's starting to say to them, listen, folks, those were the people who carried the baton in the past, but guess who it is now? And he looks about at them. And that's us, folks. That's us. If you look around, there's a great gap in the church where there are those we need to pass the baton to. And they are reluctant to take it. And we have to persevere. We cannot drop the baton. We may have to run an extra lap before we find the one who wants to grab it. But others have done that for us, so let us not grow weary in this race. Let us run it well. Praise be to God that we do not run it alone, but there is a great cloud of witnesses watching on. Amen.